Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
This episode of La Verdad Podcast is brought to you by our friend Sonia Figueroa of CSonia.com.
You know, Christian, there are times when I'm handing over my rent money that I'm like, man, how much money have I thrown away?
It's true, Vife. You know, you want this sense of independence and you move out and find an apartment and everything seems great until you realize how much money you're just giving away to someone else.
I know, man. Purchasing a home has definitely been on my mind a lot lately. And I just have so many questions. You know, they don't teach you these things in school.
Well, thankfully, Sonia Figueroa is here to help. She's an expert when it comes to purchasing a home, especially for first-time buyers like you.
Check out our chica, Sonia Figueroa, at csonia.com. That is www.seesonia.com. And find her on all social media platforms to get started on your journey towards becoming a homeowner. That's true independence.
And mi gente, ella habla español.
You're now listening to La Verdad Podcast.
Bueno, mi gente, welcome back to another episode of La Verdad Podcast, and this is your host, Christian.
This is V-Fig.
You did it so good the other one.
Sorry, I cut you off. I'm trying to introduce myself. It's not working.
One of the things that we've also been trying to do is like a good sync, right, where I finish talking and she could come in and jump in, but I never, ever get it right.
I just
either.
Keep cutting him off. Sorry. Everybody knows who I am by now, hopefully.
Awesome. So, It's also been some, one of the things that our verdaderos know, right, is that we record two episodes on a Sunday. So sometimes by the second episode, I have no voice. Before when we did, I think one day we did three episodes and I was like, I will never do this again. Three episodes, because then you can't.
We were trying to eat lunch, yeah, too, in the middle of that, and we couldn't. Oh my God, we were dying. Never again.
So by the time this episode releases, we have already done the reconstruction event fundraiser, and today I want to say we've been able to send over 90 boxes to Puerto Rico with the help of Urban Pilon. Roberto, big shout out to you, and the help of the whole community. The Chicago community has come together and has definitely donated. They donated suministro, they donated canned goods. Big shout out to the school that's right around the corner from where we're recording this, Falconer. They have supplied us with a bunch of different supplies that we've been able to send. I remember my uncle had called me, who listens to this podcast, by the way, and he was like, man, I didn't know how many people are in need, right? He's in Arecibo.
Desperate need too.
Yeah, where they haven't eaten, right? Mm-hmm. So he's in Arecibo, and he said, you know, I will always walk around the neighborhood and talk to everybody there, but never really get into the conversation of, are you in need, right? Are you poor? You see them, you have a good conversation. Now, he said a quote. He said, or un refrán que están diciendo, that basically the tree's fallen, so now the pobreza has been uncovered, mm-hmm, right? And it's something that the reason I bring this up is because the conversation that we're going to have today is going to kind of bring that to light, a lot of how Puerto Rico, the state of Puerto Rico, the way Puerto Rico has been dealing with this hurricane. So before that, big shout out to everyone who has helped us out. We're definitely thinking of doing something more. Because Puerto Rico is still in a lot of need. Our people that are coming over from Puerto Rico are in need. Our people that are staying in Puerto Rico are in a lot of need right now. So we want to do something more. It doesn't end here. So after this podcast, we're actually meeting with Roberto, and we're going to kind of talk about our second round, right,
phase
of the
two
things that we have to do. But join with me today, I have a old friend of mine that we've met through college. She was actually in Puerto Rico during this hurricane, during the Irma, during Hurricane Maria, lived throughout not having light. You were there also before that when there was El Apagón happened, yes. right? Yes. So we could talk a little bit more about yes. that. Alice actually had posted that she was here in town, and I reached out to her, and I got to get some pasteles too before we...
Write so that on your notes.
When I was talking forget. To a mutual friend of ours, Noe, I was at a bar with Noe, big shout out, and we were actually having a couple beers, and he was like, you know who you should interview Alice, because she was actually in Puerto Rico, and the light bulb clicked on, because I was like, man, I want to know. We talk about it como que si tuviera ahí, but I wasn't there. I don't know right. what exactly, how it felt, the trauma that you probably endured, and the how scared you were, or perhaps also the conviviendo with people and talking with people. So that's why we brought you in here today. How are you, first of all? And thank you for coming.
Thank you.
I'm going to put the microphone closer to you because I want everybody to be able to hear exactly what we're talking about today.
I'm cold.
We're gonna go I ahead told and turn you. On Let the, me put the heat on.
We'll turn on the heat.
She said she was cold.
Ella viene de Puerto Rico.
It's not that cold here inside, but outside it's quite cold compared to being home. So,
so you come from, you were born and raised in Puerto Rico.
Yes, I was born and yeah. raised and then moved here when I was 18.
For school?
For college, yes.
Yeah, okay. And then after school, you went back to Puerto Rico?
And yes, pretty much. I was here for a few years, and then 8 years ago, I moved back home.
Where at? Where in Puerto Rico?
Bayamón.
Bayamón, okay. So let's go back. Let's go look at the story of first, El Apagón happened
about a year and a half or so ago.
So yeah. For those that might not know, El Apagón was this thing where the grid in Puerto Rico, it's an old electrical grid,
yeah.
right? And the whole island went black.
Yeah, the entire dark. Island for about 3 days.
Yeah, so a lot of, there's a story that came out, a play that came out of it. I know the Segundo Rey Belvis Cultural Center had them here. Y se apagó la luz, I think, or se acabó la luz. There was people that I follow on that do vlog in Puerto Rico that were documenting the whole thing. And it was a weird experience because for us here in the States, we take light and electricity for granted because
so many things.
It goes off for 1 hour, maybe 2 hours, and we freak out, right? It's like, oh man, no Wi-Fi,
right?
So in Puerto Rico, had gone out for 3 days. So that kind of tells you a little bit of how bad the infrastructure was yeah. prior to Hurricane Irma, mm-hmm. right? And that's why I wanted to bring it up. You were there for the apagón.
Yes.
How did you deal with the apagón?
Well, I was in school. I still had to study. I still had to do everything that you had to do. Mm-hmm. But basically, I mean, it was only 3 days, so I guess you went on day by day. Puerto Ricans typically take everything as a joke, and you just do go out and hang out with friends and go out, have a beer and drink and just make fun of everything that's going on. We make a party pretty much out of anything that yeah. happens. But it was only 3 days. You know, people were going hysterical. Communications were off.
So no cell phone coverage either?
No, because there was no electricity. So was there any risking of losing all communications?
Was there any curfews?
No, at that moment, really, there really wasn't any curfews.
Yeah, because I know for Hurricane Maria,
yes,
there was big toque de queda, curfews, which you couldn't leave between 10 p.m. to 5 a.m., right?
Well, that was later. First, it was between 6 p.m. and 5 or 6 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
The only people that were able to go out were the people working for government
yeah.
or hospitals and stuff like that.
And that was during Hurricane Maria, right?
Yes, not Irma. that was during Maria. During Irma, there was I lost my electricity for about only 3-4 days, and then it came back, and we had electricity for a week and a half before Maria hit us.
Exactly, which has been one of those big
I mean,
big
for
ones,
me, like... I have friends that they haven't had electricity ever since Irma, so they've never had electricity, and it's been 70-something days.
Oh, my God. So, I was just trying to do the math right now, but you already did it for me. I was like, oh, my God, it's the longest time.
So with the apagón, the big – I remember the reason I bring it up is because the whole infrastructure was bad already. You could tell because, I mean, for a whole island to go dark, right?
Yeah.
Something is happening. Like, something's not being done, right? So I think it goes hand in hand with why so many people are frustrated now mm-hmm. because it was something that should have been fixed years ago and never was fixed. And then we could go into a huge discussion of
that's a topic on its own.
yeah, of what had happened to the money and what people have done with that. You know, I think when we had the Chicago Boricua resistance here, mm-hmm. they were kind of touching upon it a little bit more. So that happened, and then like let's go forward a year up, and Hurricane Irma was about to happen. I remember people were freaking out about Hurricane Irma pretty big here in the States when it was going to happen. Was it the same in Puerto Rico?
To be quite honest, I was studying for the bar exam, so I wasn't too worried about anything going on around me. Mm-hmm. The exam was still going to happen, so I still had to study, even there was electricity, hurricane or not. All in all, we've been pretty blessed, and I think that's a lot of Puerto Ricans have had this mentality of we're blessed, nothing's mm-hmm. going to touch yeah. us. Yeah. So even though it was like when you watched the news and you thought it was a huge thing, yeah, you were nervous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And people were going out a week before and getting ready, and the supermarkets, you could barely find anything. I mean, it was Florida 2 weeks before and you couldn't even find water.
Yeah.
So Puerto Rico, yeah, people get hysterical, even if it is just a tropical storm.
Mm-hmm.
It's the chaotic thing to happen, and it has always happened. So whether the hurricane was coming or not, it was going to go away or not, it always happens. A hurricane, a storm, people go out and buy a lot of supplies and try to get ready for.
And to us over here, I mean, we're in the Midwest, and specifically Chicago, and we've never really had to deal with tornadoes even.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that feeling of you know, getting hysterical or trying to find out or running to a store. I've never had to deal with that. And whenever I see it, I always like, I get so anxious because I'm like, man, like if I was in that situation, I don't know what I would do. How many waters do I buy? How many, you know? And I know that there's been people that have mentioned that prior to Hurricane Irma, there wasn't a lot of people that were prepared because Puerto Ricans had this mentality of siempre nos pasa, right? We've been blessed and you know, the hurricane always goes over or under. And it kind of happened with Hurricane Irma, right? It kind of went over the top, I think.
It was going to pass about 30 miles from San Juan, and then it just went further up. So it just pretty much hit the little islands,
mm-hmm.
Because in Culebra and a little bit of the east side, like Fajardo. But the rest of the island wasn't that affected.
Yeah.
We just received storm winds and rain.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that bad. It was a little bit more of what we were kind of like used to.
Yeah. And that's the biggest one, because I remember after Maria hit. So we're talking about Irma right now. But after Maria hit, there was a lot of people who were like, wow. Like, we've never experienced this because we've always been blessed where the hurricane kind of skips us. And people did not prepare themselves. So Irma hit. People are without water and electricity for a couple of days. Some people haven't had that. So preparing for Maria, how did you prepare for that?
Well, I was blessed to be living with my mom at the time. Now having gone through the experience, the last hurricane I went through, I was six. So it was Hugo in 86, I think. So I was a child, so I didn't know how to prepare everything. Once again, everything was fun to me at the time. and now I was blessed that I was living with my mother. My mother, right after Irma, she went shopping for a lot of food. She said that it was, you know, a blessing in disguise. She said like, oh, I didn't even wanted to go do shopping until you finish, you know, your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could have taken me. But turns out that she was taken to the supermarket and she bought a lot of stuff. Like, you know, mm-hmm. she bought water. She wouldn't care. Like, she bought, like, canned goods and a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
She's a very prepared woman.
Mm-hmm.
So a few days before the hurricane, we had, like, candungos, like, really huge. Mm-hmm. And she put, like, water in there. We had a supply of water, like, two bays and stuff like that, at least for 3 days.
But you had water between Irma and...
Irma came in about 3-4 days after we got water as and electricity,
yeah.
at least in the area we were living at.
But do you feel like... So you said with Irma, everybody's like, we're used to this. No big deal. We're fine. And then Irma hits, you're good, or... It wasn't that big of a hit and that big of a blow. And then you see in the news, another one's coming.
Mm-hmm.
It's bigger and it's going to hit. Do you feel like the mentality of the people there, did it change? Was it still the same? Like, take us through that. Or
I was kind of like in my own little planet, but to me, I knew it was going to hit us. Mm-hmm. Just by watching the news. I mean, right. When Irma was coming and you can see where it was coming by, mm-hmm. and you could see it was, you know, even if it hit us, it was just going to hit the east wing. So you knew for sure that it wasn't going to hit the entire island like this one. When you started seeing the maps that they were drawing for this hurricane, there was no buts and ifs.
Yeah.
It was going to hit us. Even if it went up or down a little bit, it was going to hit us no matter what.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think that was the difference. The watching the, like, looking at the maps of, like, how it's going to come by, there was no buts and ifs that huge thing was going to hit us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was hoping. There was a moment where, like, the day before, 2 days before, they said that it had gone up and now the eye of the hurricane was going to exit from Bayamón, which at the moment I was just like,
that's what I'm saying.
I live in Bayamón. Yeah.
Right.
But at the same time, even though I live in Bayamón, I was kind of happy if it happened like that, because it meant that it was going to affect the east side of the island and not really hit as bad as the rest of the island.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it kept its original pattern, it meant that it was going to go through the middle of the island. So there was no buts and ifs. The entire island was just going to be in a really bad shape. I mean, it's regular rains.
Mm-hmm.
And the island, like parts of the island, like Loiza, parts in the west coast that say Nundan, and, you know, is in bad shape as it is.
Yeah.
Would it be because they don't have the same resources as some of the east side of the island? Or?
No, I think it's the infrastructure.
The way
Let's put as an example, Guaynabo.
Mm-hmm.
Guaynabo is, you know, like the Blanquitos, the high class.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a part of the island that a little bit of rain is inunda todo.
Oh, okay.
So it's the infrastructure.
This is the way it was set, yeah.
It's the continuous construction in places where where there shouldn't be constructions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's has been our problem. We keep on making constructions and tearing away trees and mountains and robbing space from the ocean.
Yeah.
And now we can see the results of that.
I know that when I was looking at the aftermath of Hurricane Maria, there were some houses that you sit there and you're like, man, but who decided to put a house there? You know, like, but it's just because, you know what? It's their land. They want to do something there. They'll do it. And sometimes it might be that's all you could do, I guess. Or unfortunately, there hasn't been either policies set in place or rules and regulations or laws that will prohibit somebody from building in that particular spot. But I did see a couple houses that were all like ruined. But it's because like half of it was on the mountain and the other half had like pillars holding it up, which is very common when you go to Puerto Rico, to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially now that Maria hit, it's like, whoa, like what are we going to do now that kind of starting from scratch, right? And you need to actually figure out whether or not this place is inhabitable. You could have a house there or not. So we were talking about preparing for Maria and if you could take me into the trip of how the chaos is, because like I said, you know, I've never had to deal with that. Thank God, you know, and we're fortunate enough to be in an area that doesn't get hit that bad with storms, right? But I could just imagine it's like Black Friday or something like that, like a lot of people going over to a store. Is it crazy? Is it?
She's like, duh.
I'm talking about before Maria.
Yeah, I mean, it was beyond crazy. I remember my car was half tank of gas, but the lines in the gas station.
Before?
That, to start with, yeah. The lines in the gas stations were ridiculous. At that point, I was just like, I think I'll survive with half a tank, and I'll just deal with this after the hurricane is gone. We weren't, I mean, even though we knew it was going to hit us, we were never ever in life expecting for everything to be as bad as
so no yeah. so they, no, that,
I mean yeah. we knew it was gonna hit us or at least I knew it was gonna hit us based on how it was coming, but never in a million moons I would have expected for things to be as bad as they are.
I remember the day before and I was freaking out. I was kind of like very nervous, like my stomach was hurting because I have a lot of friends that live out there and I have my uncle who lives out there. My grandfather had just recently passed away in Puerto Rico. So to me, that was kind of like, man, gracias a Dios que he didn't have to live through this because mm-hmm. he's already through his last days. But my uncle was still over there who lives by himself. It has his nieces that are not too far away. But to me, I was very nervous about that because we had just dealt with my grandfather's death. So I'm like, man, my uncle is the only other person that's out there. So I remember I called him and I texted him. I was like, hey, how are you doing? Like, do you have everything? Like he's like, man, I don't know. I'm really, really nervous. Like, you know, they're saying the eye of the storm is going to hit and it's going to exit through like Manatí at the time. I think it was or
Arecibo.
Yeah. So.
But even before that, you talked about like loss of communications. I think, you know, for us, we're seeing just images, you know, we're not living mm-hmm. it. And then, you know, it happened. The hurricane hit and then we can't hear from anybody. Yeah. And living with that, like, I can only imagine you guys are there and you also can't speak to us over here. And if you have family here, so.
I mean, we couldn't speak with each other.
Yeah.
So it was either get on the car and try to move around and try to, like, at least with some of my friends, we were like, okay, the hurricane is supposed to come Wednesday. If by Friday we haven't heard from each other, let's meet at this place or let's, I mean, we had like.
So you had that contingency
plan. That's good, yeah.
So. Because, I mean, it was the only way we knew we were right. going to lose communication.
Right.
We didn't know it was going to be that bad, but we were just like, just in case anything really bad happens, mm-hmm. let's say that by Friday we should meet at this place that is pretty close to all of us, and at least one of us should know about the next one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how we did it, and a lot of families did that.
That was very, I was just going to ask that if that was common.
It was bad when the other person lived in the other side of the island. Mm-hmm. I live in Mayamo, and I had friends in Guanica that I didn't know anything about them for about a week and a half. Mm-hmm. And it was nerve-wracking because you were, like, trying to communicate. The phone mm-hmm. lines weren't going through. You knew people, like, the only communication we had was the radio, the news. And
yeah, because I
kept on saying, we don't know about anyone in these towns. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
So it was even worse because at least in some places you would hear the news saying, el alcalde came up and they said that everything is okay, all in all.
Yeah.
So at least you knew that people were alive or if people were dying or not, what was going on. But there was some places that even a week after, a week and a half, they were like, we still have no communication.
I remember they were using, there's an app, I have it on my phone, because the hurricane had hit. And then there was the time where everybody was freaking out over here because we didn't know about anyone in the island, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm sure, like you were saying, you know, everyone in the actual Puerto Rico, you couldn't reach your own friends, family. Some people mm-hmm. didn't even see their loved ones, mom and dad or whatever. There was an app that ended up being pretty helpful for us because we would be able to go in and look at tenían a little bit of signal or for some reason knew something, were able to relate that information back to us and give us a little peace of mind. Mm-hmm. But when you were over there in Puerto Rico, you said you were with your mom.
Yeah.
Your rest of your family, were they in other parts of the island? Or
yes,
so you didn't hear from them for...
Well, from my cousins, I heard pretty quickly. I think by the second, third day, I knew a little bit about them.
How?
At least I was able to get a cell phone reception.
Oh,
it wasn't
cool.
that much.
Hmm.
And maybe it was for an hour a day. But I was able to get a little bit of reception, so my messages were coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And my cousin lives in Carolina, so she was able to get reception, and she texted me.
Awesome.
I have friends also in the metropolitan area, which was easier. But I have friends in the south, in Guanica, that I couldn't get any information from until probably a week and a half later. And mm-hmm. it was through a friend in Virginia that kept on trying making the communication. And at that moment she calls and she says, Alice, they're okay, but they can only put, because that was another thing, there was the issue with the gas. We couldn't put a lot of gas, and in some towns there was either no gas or you had a top, like how much money you can put in gas,
like a $10, I think.
Yeah,
it was like a
so,
$10.
Yeah. In Guanica they had a $5 cap.
What?
Wow.
That gets you nothing. Like,
wow.
1 gallon probably.
Yeah. So when I got called, my friend told me, well, you know, they're doing okay. They only have like a $5 cap. She begged the guy because, you know, it's like when it gets a very small town and, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know everyone. And she kind of like begged the guy to let her put a little bit more gas so she could go to Mayagüez so she could get a cell phone reception so she could call.
Wow.
And that's how we started, like, getting to, like, rely on information. But it mm-hmm. was, like, everyone talking with everyone. It's, yeah. I think the only good thing I could say that came out of all this whole ordeal was people starting to talk again.
And that's what I heard too. I heard it from a couple people, because prior to that, a lot of people were stuck either in their electronics or always, you know, everything through social behind media, the screen, yeah. or not talking at all. You know, se conocía, the neighbors, they didn't know mm-hmm. each other. And because this whole ordeal happened, like you mentioned, people were forced to be able to talk to somebody, whether it was waiting in line mm-hmm. For the gas station. I saw some people putting up, they were waiting 8 hours
yeah.
for gas. And this was in the San Juan area. Which you know, we've seen that they've been able to get a little bit more help than some of the other areas. So I could just imagine people like in you know, my town, Quebradillas, or small Las Marías, you know, small town that perhaps el truck de la gasolina didn't get there till weeks later, right? So
it was pretty bad because there was the hurricane. It was the first 48 hours, and about, I don't know, I would say 3, 4, 5 days, they were saying Quebradillas, uh-huh. La Represa was going to break.
Yeah.
So pretty much everything was going to collapse. But like they kept on saying people need to get out. Mm-hmm. So you were still like suffering from these like agony of yeah. like, oh my God, people are going to continue to die.
Yeah, and that's one of those things I remember when that happened specifically, because me and my dad were talking, and there's the dam that the Oaxaca mm-hmm. dam that's holding a lot of that water. And it was, I think it broke a little bit or something happened.
It was already breaking. Mm-hmm. So they needed to open it a little bit and let some water run out.
Yeah.
So the pressure wouldn't completely break it, because it broke it. Then it was just going to be.
You have no choice. Everything's
yeah.
bad.
Yeah.
So people were leaving that area. My family's not too far from there either. So I think they had to leave as well. But just that feeling. So that's happening, right? Las Noticias telling us all these things. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about more here in the diaspora, where we're just like, whoa, like. What do I do? I know there was people that were like, oh, I'm meted en un avión. I'm going to go over there. I'm going to go help. But you're only one person trying to help all these different people.
Mm-hmm.
As far as how you were feeling at the moment, was there times that you felt like hopeless, I would say?
I think the worst were the first like 36, 48 hours. All you had was a radio. You were locked inside your house. And just to continue to hear the news and to hear that people were just dying at the hospitals. There was no diesel. So everything was operating out of diesel.
Mm-hmm.
So at least, for example, in the regional hospital of Bayamón, they were saying, well, yeah, the first, you know, person died. People continued to die because there was yeah. no diesel.
And that's the crazy part behind it, because they wouldn't tell us that
no.
here. Right, we didn't hear about any of that. So
the,
I remember
the government is still saying, I mean, there's only 52 people.
I mean, let's
died.
Be realistic. Like Trump went over there, and they were like, "Oh, 16 people." When in reality, there was already over 50, 60 people that were already confirmed. So imagine that. That's what we're getting over here. So we're mm-hmm. like, okay, it's not as bad. But you guys are hearing a completely different story. You're seeing mm-hmm. a completely different story. My question to you: that you were in Puerto Rico, do you think this could have been handled in a different way, or better yet, do you think they were prepared for this?
No, I don't think they were prepared.
Okay.
I think that a lot of things could have been done. They weren't done, but it doesn't have to do with this hurricane coming. Once again, all the infrastructure was bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of things, like protocols that they were trying to, and they're trying to do now, I think we are not in a moment where we should be dealing with protocols. Protocols should have been done before.
Mm.
Right.
What type of protocols?
Well, like the first 36 hours and before the hurricane, they were worried about saving lives, which I'm going to give it to the government. They were doing a really good job. But after the first 48 hours, when people are starting to die, I don't think it's moment to be inside the COE, which is... where they're dealing with the strategics
mm-hmm.
and the protocols inside mm-hmm. Centro de Convenciones in Puerto Rico. I don't think it's moment for that. I think it's moment to just keep continuing to go out and continue saving lives.
Yeah.
And continue to deliver food and continue to do all these things that are not happening because they're locked inside their own little bubble.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, no, they were not prepared. I think there was a moment where they did the best they could,
yeah.
and you got to give it to
yeah.
to them. I try to be as politically correct as I can. but I think that No, at this moment, no, they were not prepared. There's a lot of things that could have been done that weren't done.
And I think we saw that too over here, because we saw that you know, the government and the governor went into action right away, which was like, okay, mm-hmm. cool. But like you mentioned, after the first 48 hours, they went back into trying to fight for, okay, we got to do these strategies, this strategy, that, and time's wasting, right? Time's running. Mm-hmm. People are dying. There's hospitals without, you know, people need suministro, people need this and water, and they don't have it. And I think that's, and then they started getting into the whole, oh, well, we need to build electricity. It's like, no, but people need to eat. There's people that need their medicine.
Basic needs, yeah.
I mean, and I think there's a little bit of everything. I think, yes, electricity was and is extremely important, because mm-hmm. a lot of people died in the hospitals because there was no electricity, there was no diesel to continue to have, like, the plants on, the generators yeah. on. So I think electricity is very important. But that was another whole protocol thing that wasn't done ahead of time. Mm-hmm. They knew the system was bad. Ever since the apagón a year ago, I mean, they should have gotten stuff to start fixing that up. Like, mm-hmm. you knew it was in bad conditions. Mm-hmm. So you knew it was just like a little wind and everything would go downhill. Mm-hmm. So you already knew that. So you should have prepared. And I'm not saying the government per se, because like the governor said one day, well, like, I cannot take care of everything, because that's why I have a director for each agency, which is, I agree. Mm-hmm. But if you don't put the right people in the right positions, then there's nothing else that anyone else can do. Mm-hmm. But besides that, you know, there was the other aspect of people. And when you started to see that there's a Unidos for Puerto Rico, a lot of people from the diaspora kept on sending stuff to Unidos for Puerto Rico, which is a government
foundation, right?
You would go there and ask, because I have personal friends that would go there and try to take them to other side of parts of the island, and they weren't giving anything to them.
Damn.
So there's a lot of people sending out like stuff from the outside to help the Puerto Ricans, but then the government comes and say, no, we need to have a protocol for this. You're picking and choosing who you want to say.
Yeah. And that brings me on to the next topic, because we've covered the actual hurricane, but now we're talking about the donations, the suministro, the help. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's been one of the biggest things that we've had to deal with, I think, us that were collecting donations. And the reason why we said we're not going to give it to an organization, we're going to just send the boxes directly to people now that the post office is back running. The biggest fear was that, right? We had people that were recaudando fondo, for example.
Millions of dollars being raised.
Puerto Rico was a big
one. Where is it going? How is it being used?
And I've heard the same thing from a couple people saying that they will go over there and they wouldn't because, oh, we're working on the protocol, which is understandable. They're trying to figure out who needs it more. And the same thing happened in another pueblo I saw where the mayor had a bunch of stuff, donations. He had a bunch of waters. And he's like, oh, but we need to make sure that everybody gets it. But and it's like, well, the people that are dying.
Yeah. I mean, it was very frustrating. And I was in the metropolitan area. But to know that you have the money to buy water, but you cannot find water.
Or even take out the money either, right? Because
the first days, that was the first ordeal. You couldn't go to an ATM because there wasn't ATMs. So everything had to be cash basis. If you didn't have cash, which a lot of people don't, you were kind of screwed. I mean, that was the first part of it all.
Right.
You barely had access to cash. So then if you had cash, there was no water. The first day I went out to get water was probably 3 days after the hurricane, and I came back home crying, pissed off.
Oh,
because I had to spend $40 for a box of water.
Wow. Where? Where did you buy it?
The only place I could find water.
So they were selling it for $40?
Yeah.
It wasn't like somebody bought it and was like, oh, I want to...
No.
Wow.
I mean...
That's messed up. That's some messed up stuff.
You couldn't find water. So truth be told, it became a moment where you started getting desperate. You didn't have any water to drink.
Mm-hmm.
And you were trying to make a bottle like this last, at least a bottle a day, or maybe have a bottle so you can have, because you didn't know when you were going to find water again. And that was me in the metropolitan area, which I think I was blessed enough to be in a not so bad situation.
Yeah.
You know, compared to some of my friends that lost it all.
The whole house and everything.
I have friends that the water came up to the top of the roof,
wow.
and they lost everything. They lost everything.
Wow.
So I was blessed enough, and I didn't have water to drink.
Yeah.
So you couldn't find water. You couldn't, you know, the gas lines were extremely long. People were just making the lines for 6, 7, 8 hours to make it to the front, and they're telling you, we have no more gas for today, yeah. Or the curfew just hit. So even if you're there, sorry, you have to go.
You have to close, yeah.
Yeah. For you to go to a gas station and be there since at 2, 3 in the morning waiting in line for the gas station to open, and to continue to see all the public people, like the people that work for the police and all that stuff, even if they were in duties or not, they were being given priority. And it just, like, angered you because you're like, I understand the people that are in duty, but you would see a lot of people just dressed like you and me. You know they're wearing duty, but because they're police people or they work for the government, so somehow they had access to ice, they had access to water, they had access to gas. I mean, and that was frustrating.
Do you think it has uncovered? So I know a lot of people have mentioned that it has uncovered poverty, right? That you've been able to see it. I think they've been covering it for a very long time, or somehow we haven't seen it, especially here in the diaspora, where they've been able to cover poverty in Puerto Rico. And now that the hurricane hit, you could see it. But corruption itself has, like, now been to the point where it's open. Like, you could definitely see the corruption. Do you feel like that's the case?
Corruption has always been there,
but I'm saying for people from out here looking in, it's always been there.
At least when I lived here versus going back and seeing the reality, like working from the inside, I was able to work for the government for like 5 years.
Okay.
And you see how things move within. You know, it's not about what you know; it's about who you know. Huge contracts are being given to the friend of the friend, even if you know that their services are no good.
Yeah.
They would fire the good employees to hire someone that you knew they didn't have the credentials. They didn't know what the hell they were doing, but they were the friend of the friend.
Mm-hmm.
So that happens all the time. It doesn't have to do with a hurricane or not. Situation is like that in government. Yep.
And it tends to happen here too. I mean, we see it in Chicago all the time. And much more back in the day used to happen a lot more. Now that, you know, social media is around and people get to uncover that, it's a little harder to do those kind of deals. But I mean, we saw it in the recent, you know, the whole Whitefish situation, where it was like a blatant case of corruption, where it's like, whoa, like, come on, man. Like, but now, I
mean, didn't you see like the whole Lisa Donahue that was there? She was there for I don't know how long and earning I don't know how much money, and what the hell was she doing?
Yeah.
And what bothers is that, okay, people from the outside comes to Puerto Rico to hire engineers because we have one of the best schools. And people from the outside come and hire engineers in Puerto Rico. So why do you have to continue to bring people from the outside when I believe we have amazing professionals on the island?
Big time. Yeah.
So that tells you a lot.
The island has produced big time professionals for the last, what, 30 years, I want to say. You know, it's been one of those things where we had this conversation with the Chicago Boricua Resistance, where they mentioned where Puerto Rico has been producing professionals. And a little bit, too, has fallen behind producing people that know how to work the agriculture, that know how to work the basic all everyday needs.
Which actually it started to come back up in the last, like, 3 years.
Okay.
A lot of people have dedicated themselves, like young people.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
back
know, like
to farming and all that.
Yeah. And it's sad to see that all everything they had, they put in there, and everything's gone.
I know. That's one of the things, too, because just by looking at pictures and all that, you see that the greens, everything that they had built, like all the la cosecha se dañó, right? Which now that's what they lived off of.
Yeah.
So back to going into the suministro and getting donations. You had to deal with, or the people in Puerto Rico had to deal with not being able to get, like, what were some of the things that would happen? Like, they would just tell them, we're working on distributing it to somebody else, or you're not allowed to?
Well,
or what?
I have one friend, and she went because they were going, she was working with Mochileando. Like, it was a group of people that like traveling, and they were just, like, dedicating themselves to go into, like, they created a group and they started going to different parts of the island. So they went to Unidos from Puerto Rico to get suministros to take to different pueblos.
So they were going to distribute it themselves.
Yes.
Okay.
Puerto Rico is the way it is right now because Puerto Ricans are helping Puerto Ricans. It's not that the government is doing anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's the Puerto Ricans helping the Puerto Ricans. Yep. That's all there is to it.
And I've heard that.
So they went to Unidos from Puerto Rico and they pretty much just told them to leave.
Wow.
And I know there's, I read in the news that Vargas Bidot happened the same thing. He works a lot with the, like, adictos en la calle and stuff like that. And he went to get stuff to help these people and he was turned away as well. And like that, you hear a lot of, like, people telling you exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. So it's just, like, heartbreaking at this point because,
it is.
Like, it's also, like, in Patillas, the major pretty much just let things go to waste.
And that's what I keep hearing. I keep hearing of these big, you know, they have these warehouses where water's in there or canned goods or even food that's gone because nobody knew what to do. Either they didn't know what to do
there
or
no
how to distribute it. And or they were just a lot of like politica or a lot of like this.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the jackpot word.
Yeah. And it sucks. It's like you're playing with people's lives. Yep. And this is not time for politics. I think I mentioned it. I remember seeing Carmen Yulín telling Trump, right? This is not about politics. This is about
saving
lives, you know? And unfortunately, a lot of it has become a very political censored or a way to use this for their own politics.
I'm not taking away the fact that she's trying to help people,
mm-hmm.
but she's using it. She's using all the situation to her advantage. It's politics.
Because exactly.
Why can't you do things out of cameras?
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe you could help a lot more people.
Yeah. And it's funny because you see, some of the politicians or people, you know, it could be an artist or something that's helping out. And there's always a photographer behind them taking pictures. And I remember listening to a podcast from Puerto Rico and he was doing the opposite, though. He was taking pictures of the suministros that were going to people to make sure that those who donated knew that they went to somebody,
mm-hmm.
which to me was like, okay, I get it. You know, mm-hmm. it's a good thing. But he's like, but I have that photographer taking suministro with him. You know, it wasn't like the photographer was just standing there. Because that was another big thing that I've heard a couple Puerto Ricans mention that were in the island was that they were getting pissed off that you had all these different news reporters. You had like Times and all these different places going in there and just interviewing, taking pictures. But man, we need help. We need something.
I mean, you're able to get here.
Why didn't you bring something? Yeah.
Which a lot of people are not able to get to these you know, remote places, and you're not bringing anything. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's this sense of this, una desesperación that you have, and also this sense of anger, I will say, right? When you came here, how many days after the hurricane?
The hurricane hit us when? The 18th or so, and I moved here on the 28th of October, so 40 days after or so.
So what was it that you, what triggered or what happened that you said, you know what, I need to leave?
My mom. And she just couldn't take it anymore. I mean, there was various aspects and facts of it. My mom couldn't deal with the situation anymore. She didn't want it to be home alone. She doesn't drive.
Uh-huh.
I'm the only one who drives at the house. We had to make, you know, every day, the entire long 4, 5, 6 hours line to get ice. I mean, it was either you get ice or either you let the food go to the little food that you have go to waste. So, I mean, you had to, you know, every day it was dealing with the whole, like, making lines, getting, you know, trying to get water, trying to get food, or trying to get ice. And it was every day the same thing. And my mom was just, like, she was tired. If I didn't leave, she wasn't going to leave. I must say that I was tired, too, but I didn't want it to leave.
Yeah. That's your home?
It's home. I think I'm bitter because I feel that I have a lot of, that I left behind my people struggling, and I think I'm in a better situation. And so it's like, how do you, I don't know, it's a conflict of mine because people judge you if you just continue on with your life, because I guess it's what you're supposed to do. And I had people telling me, Alice, you need to move forward. If you don't help, how are you going to help anyone if you're not helping yourself?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But at the same time, people also make you feel guilty because you're trying to, like, move forward. And it's like, where do you stand? So to me, that's been the most difficult thing. Like, I don't, sometimes I don't even know how to continue. Because like, I wish I was home and I wish I was helping people. But I also have to help myself. I mean, I wasn't going to be able to get a job over there. And the little savings you have are just going quickly.
Right.
So at least here I have a roof, you know. I have a place to stay. I'm staying with my brother. I don't have to worry about, like, having to go out every day and buy food. Yeah. I'm being provided for. So it's not like I'm in the best situation either.
Right.
I mean, someone else is taking care of me. And trying to do everything that I can, reaching out to Roberto. He was amazing. Thank you again a million and one times. And he sent food to some of my friends. And it's that desperation of, like, I want to do so much. I wish, you know, the correo was working already on, like, the next day shipping so I can send vegetables and stuff like that to friends and family, which you have no access to. And whatever you can have access to, it's limited or it's extremely expensive. You go to the supermarket, see everything is empty. So it's this kind of things that you're just like going insane. And yeah, sometimes you have to make the decision. I have to make the decision to leave, even when it's not what I wanted to do.
And I know that that's been kind of the same dilemma and the same issue that a lot of people that are coming in now are thinking, or those that are going to a new place that they've never been there. At least you were here before, so you kind of understood how it worked here. But I could just imagine if I don't know the language, or if I know the little bit limited language and I've never lived in some place like Chicago, and you hit here and it's freaking 30 degrees, 40 degrees, that's a big impact. One of the biggest things that I've noticed too, and it's a push on mental health that I think should happen now in Puerto Rico, because there's going to be a lot of people that are dealing with this. It's kind of like a PTSD, right? Like a post-traumatic stress of what they had to deal with and what they're still dealing with, right? Because...
And we'll continue.
What is it? 75% of the island still doesn't have water and electricity. Yeah. And it's already been months after the hurricane hit. And some of those people had it prior to that because of Irma. What do you think we could do? Being that you were there, being that you know the people there, what do you think we could do here in the diaspora to show them or to give them a little bit of sense of like push of hope to those who are in the island?
I think that what the people here in the diaspora are doing, it's amazing. I mean, I don't think there's that much more that you can do other than to try to send food and try to reach out. I think it's about like the communication and for people to know, hey, I'm here if you need anything. That finally, you know, the services are reaching out, because before, at least when I was there, the correo was still not working right. I mean, it started working these last few weeks that I've been here. So at least people are feeling like, okay, like I received a call like 2 days ago from one of my best friends telling me, I received like 3 boxes. Oh my God. You know, they're from Chicago. And I'm like, I'm telling her who they're from. So people are starting to receive stuff. And I think that's the biggest thing, you know, things that sometimes you have no access to, or you have no money, or you have no work. And because of that, you have no money. And I think that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Other than that, I mean, professionals that can go out there and help, you know, with situations like you said, like mental health and stuff like that. But I think we're also still in a situation where some people do have access to some, you know, to work and stuff like that. But there's still people that have no food. So I think that like my biggest thing is like there's people that still have no food. I think the biggest thing that, and I'm here, like I was telling Roberto, like I may not have like financial funds to help with stuff, but I have hands. So anything you need with, I'm here. But I think it's more probably like reaching out to people that know people, because maybe we're reaching out to the people that we know, but there's a lot of people that we don't know that are in need. So and maybe like doing that kind of like research with the people from over there, like trying to make like this connection between the people here and the people there, and try to see who are the people that are still in and very much in need, and try to help those that are maybe in like more remote areas. Like, I have a friend that lives in Bayamon. She's like, hey, if you need to send any packages, I can receive them and I can distribute them.
Yeah.
So maybe that's another thing that can be done, sending stuff to people that can receive them and can go and
distribute it.
Yeah.
I know that was one of the biggest things that we try to do. So we have one of Vanessa's cousins who basically is like one of the guys that knows everybody in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
We were able to send him a bunch of boxes with suministros. We also send a lot of bomberos in Puerto Rico that are community leaders, right? So they know exactly, you know, fulano de tal needs this and hasn't eaten, and you know, they know who to give it to.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great advice, because it's something that we definitely want to make sure that those who are listening to us can somehow team up with somebody, or you know, if you have anything that you want to donate or anything like that, feel free to contact us as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because we'll put it into the hands that need to, that will distribute it and work with it. I think we're close to the hour here, so I wanted to say thank you so much again for coming by. I know that we could go into a long discussion, and it's great because I wanted to hear it from the source itself, right? For somebody that went through it, that was there. Right now, prior to interviewing you, I was thinking, man, maybe I could call my uncle, but his connection is real little. There's not really much people that I could talk to that were over there. There's a lot of people that have gone over there, have come back, that I could talk to as well. But right now, the fact that you were able to take time to come to the podcast, I really, really, truly appreciate it.
Definitely.
So, mi gente, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you know, you could contact us at info@laverdadltd.com, or you could definitely search us on social media. If you have anything that you want to donate, feel free to contact us, or if you want to relay any messages to Alice, you could contact us as well. Unless you want to give out your email or whatnot, you could do that. Or
they could
they could definitely contact me. Once again, thank you. And I don't know if you wanted to bring up anything or have anything to bring up.
No, I just want to echo what he said. Thank you for coming, because this, you know, like, part of our mission is to, you know, speak the truth about what's happening. And like he said, the media paints one picture. So we're just really grateful for having you here, giving us your story and telling us how else we can continue helping. Because like we've been saying, it's an ongoing process, and we want to make sure we can do what we can to help our people. So thank you for being here.
So peace and God bless. Take care.